how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
My name is Carl Brueggemann.
I'm Will Brueggemann. How are you guys doing this week?
Hopefully pretty good. We're doing good as well. Today we have kind of a very interesting topic, kind of a niche topic in the world of game music, I would say, but definitely an important one. And
oh, definitely. It's something that we haven't really gotten to play a lot of music from this specific, I guess, genre of video game music a lot on this podcast, but it's definitely an area where there is a lot of quality music.
This is computer music. So today we're just going to play music from computer games, and specifically early computer games. So we're not going to play...
Late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, we're not going to play any modern, you know, like Doom 3, that kind of stuff. This is just chip-based music.
Right.
From systems such as the Commodore 64, the Amiga, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Definitely, like I said before, kind of a niche topic.
Right.
It definitely has a very strong and enthusiastic kind of fan base behind it. There's a lot of really dedicated computer music fans out there, and there's this whole demo scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of chip tunes and stuff composed for these specific machines.
Mm-hmm. When you listen to computer game music, you can really tell that it's compositionally quite different from a lot of console-based music, even of the time.
I guess you could say it's similar to how we talk about how RPG music tends to be different than like action game music, and those are usually talking about the genres of the game, but I guess this is a case where the actual hardware itself maybe affects compositional style in some way, because the type of games that are made for computers, like a lot of the adventure games or text-based games, or I mean even some action games, they tend to have sort of their own, like Carl said, their own little niche of how music was made.
Yeah, and I think with this case, I feel personally that it's not as much about the type of games, it's more of the composers. And one interesting thing in what I was looking forward to for today's episode is we're featuring a lot of Western composers, much more than any previous episode. If you listen to our podcast, or you know, if you're just a fan of video game music, you probably know that the majority of the quality music that we play are from Japanese or Eastern composers.
Right. So, I mean, Koji Kondo and Uematsu are enough in and of themselves to...
Yeah, but I would say that video game music as a whole is dominated by Japanese composers. So today, it'll be nice to feature music from composers that we haven't played before, and maybe some of you have never heard of before. So when it comes to that, I think their compositional style is probably what makes computer music sound so different, is because computer music was kind of dominated by Western composers, actually, not Eastern composers. So this is what makes this topic unique in the history of game music, I think.
Exactly.
We are going to be featuring music from some Japanese computer systems and composers as well. But we're gonna get things started. And
that opening track you actually heard was from, again, the Fallen Brothers.
Yeah, that was from Tim and Jeff Fallen, and you can definitely tell it's a Fallen track.
I feel like when I was listening to that one, it sounded almost like you go to those old computers where there's like a setting, like an automatic arpeggiated setting where you just press a note and it goes...
Exactly.
That's kind of what this sounded like.
For some reason, the Fallen Brothers, that's like their go-to technique for...
Well, I mean, it does make it sound very full when you have a lot of those fast-moving arpeggios.
And very futuristic. Yeah, that's definitely one of the computer techniques that is used all over. But yeah, that was from Gauntlet 3, and that was the title music from the Commodore 64. And we're going to be talking about and playing music from that computer system a lot later. So we're going to get the ball rolling here. We're going to start out with the PC-88. And the technical name of this Japanese computer system was the PC-8801. And we talked quite a great deal about this in our Ease episode, because if you remember, the first two Ease games were composed for the PC-88.
Correct.
So we've definitely played a fair amount of PC-88 music on this podcast, but we're going to play a track from the game Dragon Slayer, The Legend of Heroes 2.
For those of you who don't remember... this PC-88, one of the reasons why Carl and I both like it so much and why it almost has, I guess, a nostalgic sound to us is it shares a very similar sound chip to the Sega Genesis.
That's correct.
It's very noticeable in some of the bass instruments especially.
Yeah. This track was composed by Miko Ishikawa, who, if you remember, was one of the Ease composers and worked on a lot of quality games for this system, as well as Atsushi Shirakawa. This is Peace. Thank you. the song called Peace from Dragon Slayer, The Legend of Heroes 2, composed by Miko Ishikawa and Atsushi Shirakawa. And this is for the PC-88. Yeah, this is a kind of a beautiful little piece here.
It's a little reminiscent of Sonic music, obviously, mm-hmm. and some of that you just can't help with the similar sounds.
Sure.
And that bell sort of melody instrument.
Yeah, so talking a little bit about the PC-88 itself, the first model was released in 1981, and was by the NEC Corporation, and the first PC-88 actually just had internal sound, so, you know, just that beep, beep, that kind of
right.
beeper sound.
Yeah, yeah.
The first system that actually had a sound chip, a proper sound chip, came in 1985 with the Yamaha YM2203 sound chip, which was obviously similar sounding to the Genesis sound chip, but that only had 3 FM channels mm-hmm. and 3 PSG channels, which are more the 8-bit sounds. In 1987, they released a version with an updated sound chip, the YM2608, which is, again, even closer to the Genesis, and that actually had 6 channels. So most of this kind of PC-88 music that we're playing today and that I've played previously on the podcast was with this updated Yamaha YM2608, which, again, had 6 FM stereo channels.
Right.
As well as 3 PSG channels, and also a drum sample channel. Or I guess it could be used for anything, but usually there's a sample channel that was dedicated to drums. And then also there was a PC-98, which is a faster line of computers by NEC, which came out, I think the first one of that came out in 82, so just like a year after the first PC-88.
Right, so I guess just keep some of that in mind as we play through some of these tracks and some nice information to note while we're playing through these.
Yeah, so now we're going to move on to the Amiga. And the Amiga is, I would say, one of the more popular early computer systems of all time.
Right. Definitely a lot of chip tunes made and composed and a lot of demos made for the Amiga as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think the Amiga and the Commodore 64 are far and above the most popular computer systems when it comes to music, when it comes to just, I guess, the demo scene.
I would even go so far as to say nostalgia and games as well.
Definitely. We're going to play a track from the game Projectile, and this was composed by Steve Wetherill. This track is called Manic Moose. That was some nice Fallen-esque arpeggiation at the end there. This is Manic Moose from the game Projectile, composed by Steve Wetherill.
You know, I keep thinking you're going to say Manic Moon, and then just like, what, Moose? Oh, that's random. That guitar solo was kind of, I guess, cute. But yeah, overall, this track, it's pretty good. I sort of feel like someone who's never played a video game before, and like this is what I'd assume, like, oh, you have a video game music podcast, and I would assume this is what all music sounds like is just really kind of overly happy, overly kind of
it is kind of stereo. It's kind of stereotypical game music, isn't it?
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel a little bit out of place playing it. Ironically, is like we play something that sounds stereotypical, and to me, it sounds really out of place.
That's funny. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a pretty good track. It's hard to say. I don't really know the context. So
yeah, I mean, I love the sounds of the Amiga. I mean, I don't know. They have, so the Amiga has 4 tone channels, and composers were able to actually split that up using sound trackers to create 6 or sometimes even 8 channels
right.
For certain games. So they're able to really push the boundaries of that system.
The Amiga was very versatile, and I mean, mm-hmm. it's crazy how, I mean, even still to this day, there's people who make demos.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff.
I mean,
it's crazy how far they've been able to push that hardware.
Oh, totally. I mean, the demo scene for the Amiga and the C64 is still thriving to this day. And if you're not familiar, a demo for like the Amiga or the C64 is just a showcase of what the system can do, both visually and to go along with it, it'll be like a really kind of cool music piece.
Right. I guess you could almost equate it to like a music video that's displaying like modern CGI or
sure.
something like that.
Yep.
But they would always have them for older computers, and it would always be impressive. Like, there's a famous clip when they were revealing the Macintosh, like when mm-hmm. Steve Jobs was revealing that, and they had this little video clip that they programmed into it to say, like, I am Macintosh, and have all these, I guess, spectacles of graphics and sound.
Yeah, I think with the Amiga and the C64, it turned into more of this whole underworld where it was all these musicians and artists and programmers that were kind of competing with each other, and there was this whole scene, and there still continues to be this day. Yeah. And we could honestly have a whole episode dedicated to that. But
yeah, I think the whole appeal is just like taking from the limitations of the hardware to create something really cool. You could equate it to people who like build entire like cities in mm-hmm. Minecraft, or like try to model like the Death Star or
whatever. I mean, totally. There's a lot of modern, really successful game composers that came from the demo scene. For example, like Jesper Kidd.
Right.
He came from the C64 demo scene. But anyway, we're going to move on here to a Commodore 64 game. This is The Great Gianna Sisters. And this was composed by Chris Hulsbeck, who is arguably the godfather of early computer music, and definitely of Commodore 64 music. He's a German composer, and The Great Gianna Sisters is one of his most famous games that he composed. But he also composed classics such as Turrican and R-Type. So he's definitely a pretty prolific composer. I think his most recent game he composed was in 2003. It was Star Wars Rogue Squadron 3 Rebel Strike for the GameCube.
Oh, that was actually a little disappointing of a game.
The game itself was kind of disappointing, but
the
I think
flying segments were fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think the music was good. So yeah, that was actually Chris Hulsbeck's.
I thought all the music was just taken straight from the films.
It was, but I mean, whatever original stuff, I guess, was done by this dude. So.
Huh.
So that was the last game he worked on, but yeah, we're going to...
It's funny, from R-Type to Rebel Strike.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to play a track from The Great Gianna Sisters. This is the main theme. This is the main theme from The Great Gianna Sisters, composed by Chris Hulsbeck. So, Will, what do you think of the sounds of the C64 as far as like the bass and all the leads and the drum samples?
Well, I think they're very unique. They definitely have a sort of muffled, low-quality sound.
Yeah, they're really dirty.
There's sort of a lot of charm in that, and it's mm-hmm. it's hard. I mean, to me, certain things, I really like the sounds due to nostalgia or just familiarity with a lot of soundtracks that were made for that hardware.
Do you think that was one of the reasons for its success and for why the music kind of held on for so many years, was kind of the charm of some of those kind of crappier sounds?
I would say the success really has to do with the fact that it's made on a computer, and it's one of the most popular home computers of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that's like tangible. If you were smart and knew how to use computers, you could program for it.
That's very true. And like everyone
had it. It's hard to do that on a console, you know?
Exactly. It's like everyone had it, so it was kind of this nice competitive thing where I can just go home in my Commodore 64 and see what I can do.
Right. You know? And now, I mean, the sky's the limit for things you can do on mm-hmm. any computer.
Yeah.
So it's just, there's sort of like an exciting nature to like figuring out the hardware and mm-hmm. being able to create things for it. Almost there was a while where people made a bunch of calculator games that they would play at school and stuff.
I was
there's
one of
still
those people.
Something kind of cool about the idea that you could play a game on a calculator.
I mean, the idea of pushing limitations is just one of the funnest things ever. But
yeah.
So the Commodore 64 only had 3 tone channels, just like the NES, in 1 noise channel. So very similar technology to the NES. Each tone channel had built-in effects, though, such as like an envelope generator and a ring modulator. So that ring modulation is an effect that you hear all over Commodore 64 soundtracks, and in general, computer music soundtracks. We've heard it earlier, and we'll hear it later today. But yeah, so that is the Commodore 64.
Ooh, sorry for yawning there. Might just be a little bit tired.
I forgot to keep tally of your yawns on this podcast. It has been a while.
I mean, it's a Monday morning, so it's kind
of... We are doing this live. So we're going to move on to, I'm really excited about this, to a DOS title. And out of any of the, I guess, computer systems or operating systems that we're playing music from today, DOS is definitely the one that hits the closest to home to me, and I know Will, definitely. We used to play tons of DOS games.
I think the appeal of DOS is it's not specific to like one type of hardware.
And it's an operating system.
It still sort of exists to this day. And
exactly, yeah. And there's DOS emulators such as DOSBox where you can play these old school games. So yeah, DOS was it stood for Disk Operating System. And it really dominated the IBM PC compatible market. That's what it was called because there were different brands of PCs, but it was all considered the IBM compatible PC market. From 1981 all the way to 1995, it completely dominated. And there was just a massive amount of games released. And just to talk a little bit about the sound, because this is a video game music podcast, Sound Blaster is really what you want to talk about. That was a family of sound cards by the company Creative, and it became the top-selling expansion card for the PC. And it was preceded by their Creative Music System in 1987, also known as Game Blaster, if anyone remembers that from the late 80s. And that pretty much was like an 8-bit sounding sound card.
Right.
The Sound Blaster 1.0 was really kind of a leap forward. That was released in 1989. In addition to having all the Game Blaster features, it had an 11-channel FM synth chip. And again, similar to, I guess, the PC-88 and the Genesis, this was the Yamaha YM3812, also known as the OPL2. And the PC-88 sound chip was known as the OPN and OPNA. So yeah, this sound chip, again, had some similarities to the Genesis, but much more channels. That's right, 11 channels in total. And many kind of different unique instruments that weren't available on the Genesis.
Right. And once you get to that many channels, the idea of limitations sort of... Mm-hmm. comes more down to types of sound and types of things you can do with the instruments,
which I think is a reason why so much DOS PC music sounds so different from, let's say, something like the Genesis. I think it really comes down to the amount of channels they had, and I personally think just the type of composer, a lot of these more Western composers as well. So we're going to play a track from the game Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis for DOS, and this is original Sound Blaster audio. This game was composed by Michael Land, Clint Bahakian, and Peter McConnell. This track is called The Car Chase.
Like where we ended off there. Beautiful chords.
This is The Car Chase, composed by Michael Land, Clint Bahakian, and Peter McConnell, which are pretty much the dream team of those LucasArts adventure games.
Yeah, they did Monkey 2, Day of the Tentacle, Sam & Max, this game. And
we're going to play some more music from them later on, but this game is absolutely phenomenal. It's one of my favorite adventure games of all time. It's just incredibly long, and it's just great that you're Indiana Jones. And the thing about the music that's so impressive is that in the game, you travel all over the world, as you do in any good indie adventure, and the music really fits whatever locale you are, whether it's New York or Monte Carlo or Egypt. It's just the music is always changing, and it's so unique and varied in this game. Right. It's just great soundtrack.
Well, yeah, very splendid soundtrack sounds. I mean, voice acting, mm-hmm. which is really cool to have that. For the time.
And there's what I love about this game is there's three distinct paths you can take in the game. You can choose one path, which is kind of the teammate path where Sophia and Indy will be together. You can take a path where, like, I'm going to fight my way through. And then you can also take a path where I'm going to think my way through, which has the most puzzles. So there's literally three separate paths, and a lot of puzzles will only be in one specific path.
I always chose the Sophia path.
Yeah. I think that was the more kind of balanced path, but right. there's a lot of puzzles in that third thinking path that weren't in the other one. So it's just crazy that you can play this long game and go back and replay it with a different path and have a completely different story.
I know this is a little random, but you know that part when, where is it? It's like in Egypt or something mm-hmm. where you have to go to this merchant and just like cycle through
yes.
all that shit. I hate it. It's awful.
You have to find the right thing to say.
And he's like, would you like this or would you like that?
And then is that the part where when you see the map and you have to look for his head and it's like all these gray dots?
Yeah.
But then you have to find the guy who has the red hat.
Just adventure game frustrations like that. It's like in Monkey Island 1 where you mm-hmm. have to talk to Stan to get him to...
Yeah, I really feel like adventure games is kind of a lost art. I haven't really... Yeah. There hasn't really been a really big one for a while. But
that
we're going to...
a little nerdy talk there.
Yeah, we're going to move on back to the Japanese world, to the PC 98, which I talked about briefly. This was a more advanced version of the PC 88. This is a game called You Know, and I think this was like a graphic novel type of a game. And this was composed by Ryu Umemoto, who is a very prolific chiptunes composer, and a lot of people kind of relate him to Yuzo Koshiro as being one of the most masterful chiptunes composer. This track is called Prologue Movement 1, and it's a very laid-back ambient piece. Here we go. This is Prologue Movement 1 from You Know, composed by Ryu Umemoto. One of my favorite parts of this piece is the melody that goes...
Yeah.
And how the bass is like sliding to a lot of their notes.
Yeah, there's that nice delay that gives it that really sort of syncopated feeling of all those attacks happening at once.
And it creates a lot of ambience. This was definitely that updated Yamaha chip, which featured
right.
much more FM channels. So you could have channels just devoted to delay, you know? So
yeah.
this could never be done on the early PC
88s. I always think that's so cool.
Yeah. It creates such a full sound. Yeah,
right.
this is a really good showcase of that
updated
chip.
One thing that's my favorite about this is, like, all the colors. There's just, in the beginning is my favorite part. There's just those very sustained chords that are focusing on dynamics.
Yes.
Fading in and out. But then there's that lone bass, which gives it that slight bit of, not rhythmic color, but just a little bit of something moving that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, boom, boom.
A foundation, yeah.
Just like... It's the only thing that's playing anything slightly melodic.
Exactly.
And there's a very exciting nature to have the juxtaposition of those sort of fading, wandering, like more
kind of
emphasis
like,
on dynamic
yeah,
colors.
Yeah, kind of like pads.
The,
those are kind of like yeah. the pads, and then you have the lone bass line.
Right, which it gives you a sense of like something epic is going to happen.
Yeah, very good for like a cutscene, which I assume this is, because I think this game, like I said, is like a visual, like a graphic
right.
novel.
I'm always also impressed in video game consoles when they're able to do sort of smooth, dynamic things like mm-hmm. crescendos and decrescendos and get louder and softer. I always
especially
think that's
with like
cool.
chiptunes. Yeah, it's really
right.
impressive, you know, because you know all the limitations.
Because they probably had to go in and program specifically at these many beats, this volume.
Yeah, it was a lot harder.
Probably tricky to get it to sound smooth. Exactly. So I always just am kind of impressed by that.
Yeah, so we're going to play another track composed by this gentleman later on. But we're going to now move back to the Amiga, and this is going to be our one demo track that we're going to play today. So we did talk a little bit about the demo scene earlier, and this is an Amiga demo. And this demo was called Enigma, and the name of the song is Hyperbased, and this was by Tip and Firefox. So this is actually a really long piece and a long demo. We're just going to play a couple minutes of it, and then we'll fade it out and talk a little bit about it. Here we go. Here is Hyperbased from Enigma. This is Hyperbased from the demo Enigma from the Amiga by Tip and Firefox. And actually, we just faded out, but this keeps on going. This is actually a song, and there's all these different sections. And actually, a lot of the cooler sections are later on. So if you're interested, I actually highly recommend. We'll have a link on our blog for this track.
Maybe this will be our secret track of the week.
Yes, yeah. So I'll put a link to the YouTube video, because the demo itself is actually really impressive. And the music just keeps going. It's just really cool. It's really 80s, though.
Right.
Like, you guys didn't hear, but while we were playing this, me and Will were kind of just jokingly singing 80s style vocals over it.
David Bowie.
And just imagining lush reverb on top of it and stuff. But yeah, this is a cool track. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of this early computer music was so 80s or dance oriented is because you had these Western composers.
Right.
You know, you had all these whiteies.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool hearing this, because it sounds like they were taking the maybe it's a more Western thing to take the limitations of the hardware on face value and they're electronic sound, so let's make electronic dance music.
Where, yeah,
like, I feel like the Japanese composers were, let's just make good music.
Yeah, and one thing crazy about specifically the Amiga and the Commodore 64 is those systems and electronic techno music went hand in hand. Even to recent years, there actually were some controversies with certain producers and artists kind of sampling some Commodore and Amiga tracks. Like, I think Timbaland got in some trouble for a Nelly Furtado song where he sampled a Commodore 64 track.
Really?
So that's just interesting how that stuff still is out there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so.
I think the funny thing is, I think this is what a lot of, again, people who aren't familiar with video games, this is what they think, like, all video game music is, just sort of like electronic, dancey.
Yep.
Like, that's what their impression of it is.
Exactly.
And it's weird for me, because this is not normally what, like, the type of music that I listen to.
Sure.
I'm mainly into video game music for, like, you know, NES style, Koji Kondo, catchy melodies, sort of cute, fun. Like, that's the type of things that I like. So it's kind of interesting hearing it's like, it's really these computer games. This is the type of music that they're thinking of, this more electronic.
This is what popularized it, and this is what really launched that revolution. And obviously, this would eventually carry over to consoles and music in general and just all kinds of stuff. But really, yeah, this was kind of where it all started, especially in game music for sure. So now we're going to move on to a system that we haven't talked about before. This is the ZX Spectrum. And this is, we definitely haven't played a ZX Spectrum track so far in the podcast. This was released only in the United Kingdom in 1982. And natively, it only has one square wave channel, but with software mixing, you could actually, you could separate them to 2 all the way to 9 channels. And this track we're hearing was, again, by Tim Follin. So knowing him, you know, he probably pushed it to its absolute limits. So he got a few channels out of this.
That sort of crazy, like, almost like harp-sounding arpeggios, just really extended, vast, ongoing like arpeggios.
I mean, the Fallen Brothers are just beasts at pushing hardware to their limits. But yeah, if you listen to most ZX Spectrum music, it sounds closer to Atari. But then you listen to this, and it's just like incredibly advanced. So this is cool. This is from the game called LED Storm, or Lead Storm, and this is the title, composed by Tim Fallon. This is Title from LED Storm, composed by Tim Fallon.
It's really beautiful how it starts off with those arpeggio type of things. It's really sort of spacey, and there's a little bit of delay going on there.
It's so impressive.
One thing I really like, and me and Carl were talking about this, he doesn't have a lot of attack on his melody or any of his like channels. There's not a lot of attack, which also reminds me of the music from Silver Surfer, which was composed by
the Fallon Brothers,
both of them, and
for the NES,
sort of a signature sound, and it actually makes this track sound kind of like an NES track, which I think it really does. Kind of cool.
Probably more than any other ZX Spectrum track. I mean, we're not really used to hearing the sounds of the Spectrum, so the Spectrum's triangle and square are a little bit different to us, but he really makes this sound familiar, and it really works well. But yeah, a lot of good, again, ring modulation. That's that kind of like rolling, buzzing sound. Like, you'll hear that all over.
Well, and it's very pretty, too, this song. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the chords, like, you know, these Fallen Brothers, they're very good at having these very pretty open sort of chords, but then having a lot of rhythmic movement in them, and it's sort of a nice sort of contrast between like and like that's the chord that you would hear if it was just sustained.
You know, kind of a fun fact about the Fallon Brothers is that they actually hate video games.
Really?
I think what's one of the reasons why their music is so awesome is because they were not thinking about, oh, this game, what should I do? They're just trying to make cool music because that's just what they did, and they actually never play games. They actually, they're not a fan of video games.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and actually now they're, I think it might have been Jeff Fallon. Now he's actually kind of, I don't think neither of them work in video games anymore, but I think it was Jeff who kind of got a little bit kind of jaded towards the whole gaming industry. It's just kind of it almost makes their music cooler knowing that. Huh. That these dudes, it kind of just like, whatever, I don't care about this stuff, but it's just like making phenomenal music.
That's really strange. That surprises me, but
It's
kind of cool. It's almost like an Alec Guinness type of thing.
Yeah. Definitely. So we're going to move on to the Commodore 64, and this track features also a lot of nice ring modulation, a lot of really cool effects. This is composer Rob Hubbard, who is one of the more well-known Commodore 64 composers, one of the heavy hitters. This game is called Monty on the Run, and this is the Game Over music. This is Game Over from Monty on the Run, composed by Rob Hubbard. A simple piece. It's very pretty, though.
Very simple. Again, it uses that ring modulation. Yeah. More so than any other track.
Almost, yeah, almost to a comedic effect. That, yeah.
It's kind of nice. I mean, we've always talked about different ways that composers and like the sound effects technicians on these machines, what different techniques that they would do to create different sounds, whether it be in pitch bending techniques or different type of instrument sort of switching.
And a lot of those techniques they would use in sound effects.
Right, but what I think is interesting here is there's almost that sort of like having one note played really fast, like again and again, to almost make it sound like it's one instrument, almost like some type of distortion sound to it.
Yeah, well, part of that, what it is it's combining two different sounds at a really fast rate. You know, that's kind of what creates that sound. But yeah, I don't know, there's just something really unique about that, and you do hear that on the NES, but you feel like on the Commodore 64, you just hear it all the time, and it's like a little bit more biting.
To me, it's like the musical equivalent of chattering teeth.
Sure.
It's very interesting. It has a frigid sound to it, almost.
Yeah, the sounds of the Commodore are so unique. They're very buzzy. They're a lot more buzzy than, let's say, like the consoles of the time, like the NES. So it definitely kind of stands apart in that way. It's like, I don't know. There's something that it really lends itself to kind of techno music and rock music.
Well, and Carl and I are talking a lot about the sort of hardware and mechanical aspects of these songs and less about the music themselves.
Sure.
But I feel like a lot of that is really front and center for both of us. It really jumps out at us because it's very different, and it's sort of this music. It's hard to talk about without mentioning some of those things.
Sure, yeah. But luckily we got a lot of the technical stuff out of the way, so just kind of focus on music from here on out. We're going to go back to the DOS, and we're going to back to another LucasArts adventure game composed by the Dream Team of the time, Michael Land, Clint Bohakian, and Peter McConnell. This is Sam and Max Hit the Road, one of our favorite games. And this is just an absolutely classic theme. This is Doug the Mole Man. This is Doug the Mole Man from Sam and Max Hit the Road, composed by Michael, Clint, and Peter. This is one of the more signature tunes for me from this game.
You're right, this might be one of my favorite tracks today.
In order to get to Doug the Mole Man, you have to go through the Tunnel of Love, and you have to turn off the power and zap Max.
That's not frustrating at all. I have this love-hate relationship with adventure games. Like, I grew up with them, and they're fun and clever, and a lot of them are funny, but so many things are just way more frustrating than they need to be.
Like, anyway, though, we should talk about the music. What I like about this soundtrack is none of it is to a click. You can tell these three guys, they actually just recorded the MIDI performance themselves, and a lot of it is rhythmically very kind of inconsistent.
Right.
None of it's lining up perfectly, I think they did on purpose because it makes it funnier. It kind of is a little bit like they couldn't perform it
There's a lot of goofiness when you hear like those MIDI instruments because you're used to hearing precise, you know, grid-based attacks.
Exactly.
But when there's sort of like a rhythmically loose or slightly ambiguous sense to it, it's one of the most unique things about sort of that trio of composers. That's a really interesting observation.
Yeah, and then especially this game, I feel like it really does add to the humor because like it's almost like this band is kind of a crappy band. It's like they're not like they have a kind of a bad drummer and like their trumpet player is just really on and off. Like it makes it funnier, you know, because the music's really good.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's one of those adding sort of a human element to it, which definitely these games have because there's a lot of humor in them.
And we're just going to go ahead and give them the benefit of the doubt that they did that on purpose. So now we're going to move back to the PC-88. And we're going to go to another Miko Ishikawa track. This is from Sorcerian Utility, and this track is called The Choice Is Yours. ¶¶ This is The Choice Is Yours from Sorcerian Utility, composed by Miko Ishikawa. I got a little bit of a Take Five kind of a feel from this, but very laid back, very jazzy. It's in 6/8 as opposed to 5.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. Interesting.
But it's just really kind of odd because the way those rhythms syncopate with the melody, it kind of gets you a little bit confused. But yeah, it's a cool piece. Very laid back. This is actually using the OPN. So this is the original sound chip of the PC-88. So this is the one that only has 3 FM synth channels and 3 PSG.
I always feel like the instruments that they use to play some of the chord type of pitches is like very signature to the PC-88.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah. They're instruments that...
percussive sound, you know, bling, bling.
Yeah, they're instruments that you don't... Whether or not they were available on the Genesis, you don't really hear them that much. It's actually interesting. I mean, the Genesis' sound chip was almost the exact same as the updated PC-88 sound chip. It was kind of like a stripped-down version of that. Yeah, we're going to move on to a PC-98 track. This is our only Falcom Sound Team JDK track of the day. We thought it was fitting to have at least one of their tracks because they're definitely very present in the early computer music world. This is Dragon Slayer, The Legend of Heroes 3, and this is called Sorrowful Melody. Gorgeous piece that is Sorrowful Melody, composed by Falcom Sound Team JDK.
Melody is right, Carl. That's pretty melody. That's one of my favorites, actually, that we've played today. I like that sort of whistly instrument, but there's some interesting, I guess, surprising rhythmic things that happen, like the boom, boom, sort of things I wasn't really expecting, because, you know, this piece sort of gets going and you sort of feel, I've heard this type of thing before from similar composers, and, you know, you sort of think it's like, oh, it's just going to be one of these, but it actually goes somewhere very interesting, and there's some very pretty chords.
And
I feel like, above all, this song has a lot of heart to it. It doesn't feel as sort of generic as some other tracks that we've played before. It has a lot of heart to it. Like I imagine that it was composed outside of the technology and hardware, and I feel like there was some musical thought and like a lot of intention to it. I think it's really pretty.
I think you're right about that. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, this one really stood out to me as well. We're gonna move on to the Amiga again. This is a game called Hybris, composed by Paul van der Valk, and he was another European composer. He was actually from the Netherlands. So a lot of Western composers here. This is the title. Here we go. This is the title from Hybris, composed by Paul Vandervalk for the Amiga. And one interesting thing is, if you're listening to this on headphones, Amiga, original Amiga music is actually really hard to listen to it on headphones because there were two channels just on the left speaker and two just on the right. That's just how the Amiga worked. So it's actually really kind of distracting to listen to
it's
Amiga
like early,
music on
early
headphones.
Early Beatles-y stereo type of mixes. Oh, yeah. Just put this over here and this over here.
Exactly. Vocals 100% left. Sounds good to me. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to listen to on headphones, but...
I just sort of noticed it with this track, and I was playing a little game, taking each bud out of the ear. Huh.
If you missed, you know how a lot of people nowadays listen to music just with one ear, like you'd totally miss like...
Yeah, that's actually one of my biggest pet peeves, because I don't think a lot of people... I think nowadays people don't realize that music is stereo. Like they don't realize that there's different panning, and there's a lot of people, just one ear.
It's
and
sad.
It's like you're missing some information.
So we're going to move on to another DOS title. And like I said before, we talked a little bit about the Sound Blaster. There was another way to get sound for those DOS games, and that was the Roland MT32. And that was a synthesizer, a MIDI synthesizer module released by Roland in 87. And that started to be used for computer games around 88 and pretty much set a standard for computer music quality. And at the time, it was just leaps and bounds above the Sound Blaster quality for sound. And not, I would say I could relate it more to modern day general MIDI. So obviously a lot more realistic sounds. It had a built-in reverb effect. So there were a lot of these DOS games that had additional support for the Roland MT32. And one of those games was Silphied. And this track is called The Legend of Silphied. And it was composed by Masakuni Mitsuhashi. Here we go. This is The Legend of Silphied from the game Silphied, composed by Masakuni Mitsuhashi. I really like that part. Dun, 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 dun. That was nice.
Yeah,
nice
no.
dissonance.
Yeah, very nice dissonance, interesting rhythms. I'm not a big fan of where it went. I thought it was going to go somewhere interesting, and then it just sort of felt like, oh, you have to do it twice, and then it didn't really go anywhere. But
yeah, this is the intro music of the game, so when you're watching
the
opening
cutscene. I like that name, Silphied.
Yeah, it's spelled really confusingly. It's spelled S-I-L-P-H-E-E-D. So I thought it was Silphied for a while.
Huh, Silphied.
Yeah, so this was a game that wasn't originally for DOS, but it was ported to DOS in, I believe, like 88 or so. So one of the early examples of Roland MT32 music on the DOS. All right, we're going to go to Commodore 64 again. This is a game called The Last Ninja 2. This was composed by Matt Gray, who was a British composer. This is Central Park.
We'll be right back.
Very cool. This is Central Park, composed by Matt Gray from The Last Ninja 2. This is like a quintessential Commodore track.
It's interesting how they're using that that modulation effect that we were talking about. Almost is it's almost uses almost like a snare drum type of march thing.
Yeah.
But it's a pitched instrument.
Totally. Yeah, it's kind of killing two birds with one stone. It's giving you a little bit of a rhythmic backbeat while supporting the chords. But yeah, the bass is so buzzing. Everything is so buzzing. And that lead instrument is just one of those great Commodore instruments that you could never really get on another system. I don't know.
Right.
It's just,
I completely agree. It's very buzzy, very sort of whiny in the higher register.
Yeah. Very tasteful amount of vibrato on that, too. That's
yeah,
so
something
cool.
About these Commodore sounds, it really reminds me of that melody. It reminds me of something that the Fallen Brothers were able to capture on the Silver Surfer mm-hmm. NES soundtrack mm-hmm. with their lead instrument. Like, it's very reminiscent of these type of sounds.
Well, I mean, honestly, I feel like when they were working with the NES or really any other system, they were thinking about it in a Commodore 64 way, you know, because that's probably what they're more comfortable with. And the fact that they weren't really hugely into video games, I feel like they were more into that scene just for the music. So when it came time to work on an NES game, they probably were just doing the same type of thing, just translating it to that hardware, you know?
Right.
But, yeah. That's an interesting track there. Yeah, very interesting music today. I mean, it doesn't really sound like most of the kind of music we've played so far in the podcast, but...
It's very important to mm-hmm. video game music history, though, and it has mm-hmm. a very large following, and mm-hmm. it's nice to hear different types of ways to make effective video game music from mm-hmm. around the world. And I think it's interesting, this more Western perspective, coming from a little bit more of a, I guess, more ambient, less in your face type of, less catchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say less catchy. I don't know about less in your face, but probably less catchy. A little bit, definitely more techno-based for sure.
I think some of the instruments are more in your face, mm-hmm. maybe less subtle, but I, as far as like the music... Like,
it's less melodic for sure.
I'll put it this way. If this is what all video game music was, we probably wouldn't have this podcast.
Very true. I would say that.
Because
yep.
It doesn't really break the conventions of what video game music can do.
Well, I would say that it doesn't really sound that much like, quote, video game music. It sounds much more like techno music of the late 80s. So, I mean, in that sense...
Which
it
is what a lot of people think video game music is.
Yes. But, I mean, it doesn't sound like Super Mario Brothers, you know? So it kind of it's very impressive because it's able to sound like a genre that had already existed and that was continued to existed. But it's interesting. It's like the chicken or the egg for a lot of people nowadays. But we're going to move on to another DOS LucasArts adventure game because we can't get enough of them. And again, another one by the Dream Team, Michael Land, Clint Bohakian, and Peter McConnell. This is Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge. Obviously the sequel to The Secret of Monkey Island and another stellar adventure game. This is Fat Island Jail. It's Fat Island Jail, composed by Michael Clinton Peter from Monkey Island 2. And I love the ending of that because actually the music changes as soon as you get out of the jail. It changes to that ending. And it's one of the cool things about iMuse, which was a system that Michael Land invented along with Peter McConnell at LucasArts. It was a system of music, kind of an interactive music system for these old LucasArts adventure games. And it was really influential to video games in general. It was basically as you're playing the game, the music would change depending on where you were and what you were were doing in the game. And I think in the future, down the road, we actually are going to have an episode dedicated just strictly to iMuse and to these LucasArts adventure games, because I think it was an era of game music that I think is underrated and a lot of people aren't familiar with. So we would love to bring some attention to that.
Right.
So, yeah.
I about this track specifically, though, I really like, I've always been a big fan of this. The chords are just sort of nice and just what you need for the image of a jail, and
sure,
the sounds and everything about it. It just comes together really nicely. All the rhythms, the sort of plucky sound of the instruments. And again, since they probably weren't using a click track and it was just performance, some of the laid back nature of the melody, it's really nice. It's like as laid back as you can make triplets feel like. It's really kind of interesting.
And again, it adds humor. It adds a lot of humor to what the music is already there and to the game. And something cool is that clarinet instrument. For me, that's like the quintessential LucasArts adventure game instrument. And that was one of the instruments that you didn't hear that exact instrument on the Genesis or a lot of the other FM Yamaha chips. So for me, whenever I hear that clarinet instrument, I know I'm playing a LucasArts adventure game.
Right.
So that's very cool. Now it's time to move on to our track of the week. And it also happens to be the last track we're going to talk about today. This is from a game called Ground Seed. This is composed by Ryu Umemoto and Ryu Takami. So twice the Ryus. This track is called Akira, and this is for the PC-98, and this is a very notable use of that new sample channel that the PC-98 had. This is just a really catchy piece. Here we go. That is Akira from the game Ground Seed, composed by Ryu Umemoto and Ryu Takami for the PC-98.
This is also our track of the week. Very nice, very cool song. I really just love that.
I love how groovy it is and how much pitch sliding there is, like on the bass and the lead instrument.
Yeah, I mean, this really does sound like an authentic, like, techno song.
Yes.
But it's very pretty. It has a nice sparse melody.
And it's interesting,
hitting all the right points,
that it's coming from the Eastern, some Eastern composers, on a Japanese computer system. So it's kind of cool that in a different part of the world, on, you know, different systems, they were kind of doing a similar thing. But
yeah, to me, it sounds very British or almost European to me.
See, for me, it does still sound very distinctly Japanese. I just think it's interesting that they were both kind of going for a similar kind of a genre.
I guess with that sort of doom, 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 doom,
yeah,
doom, doom.
The beat, sort of, yeah. The beat is definitely very Western, but I don't know. I feel like the melodic contour for me still retains a lot of the Japanese quality.
Right.
But
well, I feel there's a little bit of sophistication in this, and it feels very authentic. There's nothing sort of like really in your face about it.
Yeah.
There's nothing. I don't feel like it has that sort of camp factor that some of the other tracks
have. That's a really good point. I feel like a lot of the Eastern composers in this computer era were able to bring a level of sophistication to it that some of the Western composers weren't. I do feel, though, like, for example, like the Michael Lands, a lot of the LucasArts composers, I do feel like they brought a lot of sophistication to their music, and I feel like they were kind of thinking of their music more of like film score, but it was nice because with the iMuse and stuff, they were able to have it really interactive and have it really varied and stuff. But obviously for like the Commodore 64 and the Amiga, that wasn't really possible, and also the type of games and stuff. It is interesting. It's kind of a really broad topic when you think about it.
Right.
Computer music. And yeah, we didn't, obviously, if you were expecting, you know, StarCraft and that type of stuff, we will probably, we will have an episode maybe called PC Music, featuring music, you know, from more modern PC games, but this is just strictly chiptunes music. Right. So, sorry to disappoint you if you were expecting, you know.
Oh no, no StarCraft, no WoW. Ugh, I'm glad
one day.
No WoW. But yeah, this was a very important episode to do. It was very nice, definitely a change of pace in our musical palette, so to speak, on this podcast. We haven't done a lot of type of music like this, but it's really nice to, I feel like as we go on, we keep exploring more different types of music from around the world. And I feel like as a listener, if you're going through the journey with us, hopefully you're getting a more well-rounded sense of what it means to be video game music and what video game composers can do and what it means to be a video game composer and all the different types of machines and varieties in which they can compose and create music. It's really interesting to hear something like this, to Super Mario Brothers, to,
yeah.
I mean, Call of Duty. It's really kind of crazy how far we've come.
Also, and I think another thing is maybe today, hopefully you've learned something about maybe the kind of the technical side of these computer systems and maybe the limitations they had. It was interesting how many FM synth chips that Yamaha made for a lot of these computer systems and also arcade units of the time and stuff. So that's kind of fun. But yeah, hopefully you guys enjoyed that episode. We, you know, again, look forward to doing this next week. Feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to our RSS feed and all that fun interweb stuff.
Nice. So thanks again for checking us out. We really appreciate it. This is already our fourth episode for the new season, so we just have a lot more exciting stuff to come. We're going to be doing a lot of new things on the podcast this season, so stay tuned every single Monday, and hopefully we'll keep doing things to entertain you guys. So once again, my name is Will Brueggemann.
And I am Carl Brueggemann. We're going to play you guys out with a Yuzo Koshiro track. It's fitting that we play at least one track from him because he was all about the computer music. This is from the PC-88 from the game called The Scheme. This is The Elegy of Battle. See you guys.
Peace out.